Back at it, you and I together wrapping up a busy month with a Tuesday, March 31st edition of Connecticut Today right here by CC. Should the state get into the student loan business? That's what I asked to kick off the show, with Governor Ned Lamont offering supposedly up to $10 million to replace Trump White House federal student loan cuts for certain advanced degrees. Quinnipiac University Assistant Professor of Management Dr. Don McCauley discussing the announced sale and move of the WNBA's Connecticut Sun to Houston next year. Hartford Current columnist Kevin Rennie talked about his story on a growing controversy at the state office building, while Yankee Institute blogger Megan Portfolio talked about what bills have a chance to become law soon at the Capitol.
So, oftentimes, if we can't pay out of pocket for something, and who can if it's more than a couple of $100, right? I guess appliances, stuff like that, home repairs, home renovations. Yes, Pauline knows about that. You have to borrow money. You've got to take out money. You have to take out a loan. Loaning money is, again, probably as old as man walking upright on the face of the earth there. There was probably some grunting going on. You know, when they were negotiating, you know, how many rocks the other guy wanted, because the other guy in a loincloth said it's going to take this many rocks. Then you have the concept of interest. The only reason you loan money is to make money. Banks would say, credit unions would say, all of that happy stuff. Well, sometimes you just can't afford stuff. And sometimes it's not wise to take out loans with stuff. Or, you know, there's a high risk reward factor in taking out loans. Well, guess what business the state of Connecticut is thinking about getting involved with? Now, we don't know whether this is going to fly, actually. But again, what I do on this show is to let you know of stuff that you should know about early, so 6 months or a year and a half down the line, you're not calling this program or other program saying, hey, how the did this happen, Paul? This is from the College Fix, which is a right-leaning college news site, but apparently the story is legitimate. Now, in this time of the state of Connecticut, where we have a decent budget rainy day fund, we have a lot of money that both parties are trying to, in some way, shape, or form, spend. We have nonprofits looking for money. We have debates as to whether some of that money should be used to lower election rates, electricity rates, rather, or election rates. We have this. You ready for this? The state of Connecticut. Here's the headline. Connecticut may issue student loans to offset Trump limits. Now, Connecticut. So, usually, up until a few years ago, and that's now almost all federal, but up until a few years ago, you had a couple of choices, right, for a student loan. If it was for you or your grandkids or whatever, you had the federal student loan program and the private student loan programs. Well, because of allegations and funny business, pretty much I don't think there are any private student loans available anymore. There might be. I don't know. But now it's all federal student loans. And again, you know how some of these loans have a very high delinquency rate. Some of these loans have a very high default rate. So the state of Connecticut, and there's the T word involved here, says right here, a story on the College Fix. Check it out. There's a link on it to our site, our buddy Tom Dudchick. Check out at thecollegefix.com just what we need. And again, let me say, as we embark on this discussion, I'm not against going to college. I'm not. I went. My son went. A lot of people in my family went. There's nothing wrong with a good, well-rounded college education, higher education, based in the humanities and Western civilization. Then you build on that to professionals. I have nothing wrong with that. Nothing against that. I work on and off for a couple of universities, so I love the people that surround these places. Nothing wrong with that. But there's a question of cost. And now, the state of Connecticut may create a new, you ready for this? You're sitting down for this? Right? You're sitting in your car. You're strapped in. Do you have two hands on the wheel? Are you not choking, not chewing anything? Because you may choke on it. All right, you ready? The state of Connecticut may create a new taxpayer-subsidized graduate student loan program to offset upcoming federal limits on certain borrowing. Now, the Trump White House is doing some stuff, putting limits on certain student loan borrowing. All right. Some of that's controversial. We get it. We understand it, right? But the governor says he supports a bill to issue $10 million in bonds to underwrite certain graduate student loans. So, again, the state would be putting this on a credit card, okay? When the state, when you hear about state bonding, that means they agree with investment houses to sell a certain number of state of Connecticut bonds at a certain interest rate that will be due payable, due on demand on whatever date it is, and you got to pay it back with interest. The One Big Beautiful Act bill signed by the president does place new limits on borrowing for certain undergraduate and graduate programs. So the governor wants to issue $10 million in bonds to underwrite graduate student loans. Notice the words I had in there earlier. Taxpayer-subsidized graduate student loans. Now, the bill is pending. It may not go anywhere in Hartford. It would allow the Connecticut Higher Education Supplemental Loan Authority. That's a lot. Can't they? My God. To issue loans for eligible programs, officials have criticized the White House for limiting the amount of taxpayer-subsidized student loans for programs including nursing and counseling. Graduate students in law and medicine can borrow up to $200,000 in taxpayer-subsidized loans, while others can only borrow $100,000. Nursing degrees are currently excluded from the higher limits. Now, I can understand people need the money to be what they want to be all that you can be, as the Army commercial used to say. My point is this. Is this another business the state wants to get involved in? And again, I understand it's not really cash up front. It's cash eventually. It's bonding. It's on the state credit card. Is this the business the state wants to get into? 203-333-9422. 333-WICC. Now, you can debate federal changes in laws and limits and everything. I'm not saying you can't. But is part of the problem, I'm just putting this out there, is part of the problem of these costs, which are debilitating to some students, particularly long-term, if they can't pay them off, even if it's in a good-paying field, is part of the problem here money and the relatively easy availability? Now, before you throw verbal darts at me, let me tell you, I am in the process of still paying off my son's college student loans, which I do with great pleasure. One of the things I did as a father is pick up my end of the college education and his prep school education. I'm not complaining about that because that was a conscious decision I made. I could have said, no, I'm not doing it. But what the heck am I on this earth for? But again, should this be ultimately, if there are defaults here or an inability to pay back, should this be on the backs of the taxpayers? Maybe the Trump White House was right to lower these limits. I mean, college educations, that you look at what some private and even public schools cost. And you wonder, does it really cost that much? I'm sure the area schools, they will justify every cent, and if they can't, they wouldn't be open. I get it. But again, the state may issue loans to offset limits from the Trump White House. This a good idea or not? And we're not going to do it straight ahead with the cash. We're going to, in essence, borrow, bond it. To me, that makes it even more a little dicey, but maybe, I don't know. Maybe I'm the dumb guy again. 203-333-9422. 333-WICC. So the state of Connecticut, by the way, hey, how are you? We're at 203-333-9422. 333-WICC. The state of Connecticut is thinking of getting into the student loan business. How about that? They, the state, might create a new taxpayer-subsidized grad student loan program to offset upcoming federal limits on certain borrowing. And this was encased in that one big beautiful bill, and this went into effect, I think, a few months ago, and more limits are coming up. The governor is supporting a bill to issue $10 million in bonds, long-term bonds. I guess these are 30-year bonds, 10, 15, 20-year bonds, I don't know, to underwrite graduate student loans. And look, I have nothing against people getting an education, grad, undergrad. That's not the issue. Is this something the state should be getting involved in? The state wants to underwrite loans. They want to set up their own healthcare system. I mean, really? Meantime, Our electric bills are up the wazoo. We all knew where the wazoo is. But instead of hearing any outrage from some of our legislative leaders the other day when Connecticut moved now into second place in the highest electric bills in the country tally, I think we're only, come on, we might as well be number one. We're just $3 a month behind Hawaii. Come on. You think Gino Auriemma and Danny Hurley want to be in second place? No, let's take that Huskies mentality. Let's be number one. But instead of doing anything like that, and I know what you're going to say, oh, come on, Paul, number one, it's bonded. Well, yeah, that's part of the problem. Number one, it's bonded, so we put more on the credit card. And number two, we step in and basically guarantee this stuff with taxpayer subsidies. The bill I'm talking about would allow the Connecticut Higher Education Supplemental Loan Authority. A lot of syllables there, huh? The Connecticut Higher Education Supplemental Loan Authority to issue loans for eligible programs. Officials have criticized the Trump White House for limiting the number of taxpayer-subsidized student loans for programs, including nursing and counseling. Now, the White House is countering that the loan programs, for example, for nursing only affect a very small amount of specialized nursing. But man, there are some third rail things in this society that I just don't understand. Now, you may say, well, why is the White House doing this? The White House says here that limiting access to federal loans will, get this, force colleges to reduce tuitions and fees, which have outpaced inflation. I mean, that, listen, we have wonderful schools here in Connecticut, but I have heard from professionals who work in the student finance industry. They did it for years. I had a guy come to my son's prep school one night. You know how a lot of you folks have those one or two night seminars about how to get your kid into college? Well, one of the parents asked, why does the cost, you know, saying, hey, we love these colleges, everybody goes, but why are the costs still going up? And this guy, in fact, I had him on the show here once or twice. He left such an impression on me. He said, well, that's because there's more money available. He said, if the available amount of student loan federal money was ever cut to any degree, the prices would come down. They would have to. What happens when your local, you know, your local car dealer has an end of the model year sale? Well, you hear about that all the time, right? The best time to buy a car is July, August, when the dealers are getting their allocations from the new company for the new models coming out in late August and September. Why does that never happen with college costs? And again, nothing against colleges. I work for a couple of them. But this notion that you can't pull back on some loans and maybe tell some applicants, hey, maybe you should work for a couple of years and then borrow what you can, you'll have less debt. But is this something the state should get involved in? You tell me. It's our question of the day at 203-333-9422-333-WICC. So the state wants to borrow, put on a credit card, use our state bond authority to say, hey, here's $10 million bucks to you folks who couldn't qualify because the loan funding has been cut. Well, the White House says they're cutting some of the funding because it's one of the reasons that the cost for these schools keeps going up and up and up. So should the state of Connecticut issue taxpayer-backed student loans for some grad college degrees? You tell me. And if you've had an experience with you or yourself or your wife or your son or your daughter, love to hear about it. 203-333-9422-333-WICC. Some down news for sports fans over the past couple of weeks. We kind of knew that we kind of knew both teams were on their way out. It's been buzzing for a year or so that both the Bridgeport Islanders / Sound Tigers were on their way out. And the Connecticut Sun now being moved to Houston. Will they call them the Houston Comets again? I don't know. Is this an economic thing? Is it a demographic thing? Is it just people would rather sit home on their keisters with 900 channel thing? He's been on the show before. Quinnipiac University Assistant Professor of Management, Dr. Don McCauley joins us. Don, it's Paul again here, sir. How are you?
How you doing? You're hitting the nail. You're hitting the nail on the head today.
I am. Well, thank you. In what way? What nails have I hit for you, Don?
you're absolutely right. It's the economics.
It's
a combination. It's a good market. I mean, think about Houston right now. The rodeos. You have basketball. You have the Brooks. You have basket. You have football. So I think as a category, this is a perfect move right now. I mean, there was conversation about Boston, but I don't see Boston doing a service to women's basketball right now. I mean, I think it's nice for the apple cart. But in terms of having an audience that's looking, okay, I'm going to get behind this female team, I don't think so. But I think Houston really has an appetite for it, and they have a long legacy in the WNBA with the Houston Comets.
Yeah, you know, Don, I've been trying to explain to people. I say, listen, it's nothing against the team. It's nothing against the basketball. But, Don, you and I both know that now the WNBA is going big time. They want corporate advertisers, right? And, Don, love Connecticut. I'm a lifer. I know you're a Connecticut guy with deep roots at Hill House and city of my birth and in New Haven. But, Don, you and I both know there. I don't think there are any corporate advertisers, Don, who say, I got to have Connecticut on my display ads by or I'm not signing. It's sad, right? But it's just a fact.
You know,
life.
It's actually weird. So I think people are having meetings now. There's a lot of meetings about the sport ecosystem, the sports economics that right now. And I think Connecticut has an appetite for wanting to be involved in it.
Yeah.
But you got to have the talent. You got to have, like, what is that marquee thing going to be? And if we don't do that, it's right now it's our college programs, right? It's turning into, as I'm looking on our feeds, it's going to be elite high schools in our prep schools. And so, like, what does hockey do? Like, we lost the Whalers. And, like, for someone that's at Quinnipiac, like, we definitely want this ecosystem to boom. But when is hockey coming back? When is women's sports going to come back? And so it's hard. So we kind of live through our college spaces.
Yeah, and you know, Don, one thing I was musing finally with a couple of listeners yesterday. Do you find it interesting? Because even if you say the concentration of wealth is too Fairfield County-centric, okay, but I was wondering aloud, Don, on the show here yesterday as we were talking about this, how is it that with the massive income, right, of Stamford and Greenwich and New Canaan and Wilton and Westport, like somebody hasn't dropped like a 4,000 or 5,000 seat AA ballpark in there somewhere, akin to what they have in Hartford? Like, why isn't there a AA thriving baseball team in Fairfield County with more money from God?
It's when we get out of this leisure mindset. So right now we will spend millions of dollars to create skate parks, and I think it has its category.
Yeah.
But in terms of like, okay, you want to bring a team here. You got to get a GM. How are you going to get them here? How does it feel? What does it feel like? Mm-hmm. That's the business of it. The leisure of it is like, yeah, we have a lot of indoor facilities. We will host a lot of competitions, and it's kind of like something like, okay, it's something to do. It's like AAU. It's like intramurals. Yeah. It's like the professional aspect of it requires like how are we going to steward over a professional team? And I don't think that is in the culture right now, because college does it so easiest for us.
Yeah, it is. You know, Quinnipiac, Sacred Heart, UConn, Yale. Yeah, it does. Plus, you know, Don, finally, it ain't like 20 or 30 years ago, man. Now you can sit home and stream every freaking movie ever made, any sitcom. You could rewatch a game with Google Highlights. So going to the game, sadly, and you guys like you and I grew up with that, it just doesn't feel like it's special anymore. You know what I mean?
The work has to be intentional. I mean, when you go in, you feel like someone thought about like the carpet or like the seats and all the small things need to look a lot grander. So hopefully the price doesn't. But that's in our ecosystem, and I believe that it's leisure. And so not just Fairfield County, other places, they can always go leave and acquire it. What we're saying more so is, how can we have that stay at home? That it's something that we all can enjoy from Greenwich all the way to the end of the state.
Yeah, yeah. Quinnipiac University Associate Professor of Management, Dr. Don McCauley. Don, good to chat with you again, man. Stay close, and we'll chat down the road. Thank you, sir.
Absolutely.
All right, Dr. Don McCauley there, Quinnipiac, right here on WICC. You may recall a couple of days ago, I read what excerpts I could on the air about the basic details of what was going on and just something that reads like a bad Netflix series that's going on at the state office building that holds offices of the highest people in Connecticut. And it was so bad that I really had to edit myself. And I always say stuff like that doesn't happen out of a vacuum. There's reasons behind it. Joining us right now is a regular here on the show from time to time, Kevin Rennie, blogger, reporter, investigator, Hartford Current. His latest piece, or one of his latest pieces, Hot House of Lust, Rivalries and Neglect of Duties in Connecticut. Kevin Rennie, good afternoon, sir. How are you? Thanks for joining us. How are you?
Thank you for inviting me. I am good, thank you.
How were you in these tumultuous times? Yeah. How were you able, Kevin, to piece all this together and tell my listeners who may have raised their eyebrows when I read some of the news facts of this, that this is happening at the state office building where, again, our legislative officers and our constitutional officers...
No, our statewide, yes, our constitutional officers. And... I would add, as a historical note, where Peter Falk once worked.
Really? I didn't know that. Wow.
He was in the budget office.
Come on.
Yes, he worked there, and he was doing local theater.
Yeah.
And he was good enough to roll the dice and
yes.
Became a big star. Yep. But he worked in the state office building.
Yeah, yeah. I'm guessing he held a little bit more respect for the building. But what has been going on there, Kevin?
So there's been a state trooper posted there Monday through Friday since I think 2020, and of course the security is primarily provided by private security contractors. Mm-hmm. And there is a trooper there during the day, and it's not always the same one. And at this point, there were I think three. This was starting in 2024, three of the troopers became involved with a private security person who was also working there at the front desk. Uh-huh. And there is a small office just for the troopers, and three of the troopers became involved with this private security person, and one of them was engaged in a longer liaison than the other two.
Okay.
And I they were with that one. They were having sex in the building.
Uh-huh.
Yep.
And there was a bet involved or something like that?
Oh, I didn't. No, I don't think so. I didn't see that in the report.
Oh, interesting. Because that, that was an early report. Yeah.
And then they, I'll have to go back and look, but they, the security officer in question, got into a dispute with a coworker who then just sort of blurted out what had been going on.
Yeah.
And the state police, I will say they, when they heard about it at Troop H right around the corner, mm-hmm. they acted quickly and they, transferred the three officers who were thought to be involved, and they the commissioner Higgins ordered a internal affairs review and investigation, and that took place. And last week there was the report was issued, so it was about 2 months for the report to be issued, which is record time for the Connecticut State Police. They often drag their feet on these internal investigations, so much so that it gives the officer who may or may not be in trouble time to rack up enough service to retire,
to leave,
and
right.
then they're yeah. So you know, it was really salacious. I also had to edit myself. As did you.
Really?
Yeah. And I did not include every incident. I think I conveyed accurately what was going on. And it's disappointing. And I know Commissioner Higgins was really upset about it. And I think others were. It has become such a notorious story that it does place a burden on the reputations of other members of the state police.
Kevin, the tentacles
of this.
That's
too bad.
Yeah, the tentacles of this. That's what I wanted to wrap up with here. Yeah, and is there any, did you find anything here? Was there any intonation that, well, this is just as usual here? Or
no.
Is it? Okay, that's good. So that's why the state
not
police
at all.
Jumped on this. Good, good, good.
Yes, not at all. And I will add that I do think that the place for this was going on because it's the building with four statewide elected officials,
yeah.
who are mindful of their safety. I do think that may have added to the urgency of this.
Yeah. Yeah. Folks, check out the story if you can. A hot house of lust, rivalries, and neglect of duties in Connecticut State Building. Kevin Rennie is the guest. Kevin, any lessons learned before we wrap up here?
No, I didn't learn any lessons. I didn't already know. So, it's funny you say that. I do get the impression that people didn't know this.
Really?
People knew that there was something going on. Uh-huh. Well, they did, obviously, because somebody blurted it out.
Yeah.
And there was, when you read their interviews, I think it's 58 pages. It is reading that it's an easy read.
Yeah.
So you do see that the people who were interviewed saying, "Oh, yeah, I knew this had been going on for a while." They did, wow. No one seemed to know all the details, but a bunch of people knew. Knew enough details that you'd think they might have said something.
Yeah. Yeah. One of those deals. Yeah. I got you.
Yeah. And the collateral damage is terrible.
Yeah. That's... Yeah. 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 But at least you got it out there. Kevin Rennie, Hartford Current, folks. Check it out. Kevin, as always, fascinating stuff. Good job on this, as always. And we'll keep in touch. Thank you, sir. We appreciate it.
All right. You're welcome.
Thanks.
You.
Bye. Kevin Rennie, Hartford Current. A hot house of lust, rivalries, and neglect of duties in a Connecticut State building. All right, here she is every Tuesday at about 5:15 or so, whenever I can actually hit near the mark. It's Megan Portfolio, Hartford Portfolio Blog of the Yankee Institute. Yes, Megan is the one that, like a saint, watches hours and hours and hours of many of our state lawmakers bloviating on CTN and reads hundreds of pages of text and PDFs of bills until she goes, uh-oh. Ms. Portfolio, good afternoon, ma'am. How are you?
Oh, I'm good. You just reminded me. I have like 3 hours of CTN I have to watch tonight when I hang up with you. So can I just stay on longer?
3 hours.
Can you just put me on hold?
Now, admit it, because I do, too, and I'm not going to have you say it. I'll say it for me or for us. Because, I mean, sometimes you watch people and I on C-SPAN or CTN, and, right, you just, and again, you don't have to say yes or no, but I know sometimes we watch people and we just go, oh.
Yeah, enough. Yeah, probably multiple times a day. I'll admit it.
All right. So what has kicked on your radar defense system here? What have you heard? What has been an uh-oh moment over the past few days since we met left? What should people
This definitely qualifies. So okay. I've talked about this on your show before. For the past, I don't know, 3 years, the Senate has been trying to pass this bill that would provide unemployment insurance to people that go on strike.
Oh, we're back now, to that again.
Yes, we're back to that. Now, when you go when to collect unemployment, you have to lose your job through no fault of your own. Sure. You have to be actively working for work, and you have to be able to work. Mm-hmm. When you're on strike, you do not meet any of those qualifications.
Yep, you decided that's it. I'm walking off. Yep, that's it.
The feds recently, as of I think the end of last year, came out with some guidelines on unemployment insurance and what the states have to do to comply with the federal standards. And one of the things that they have to do is not give unemployment to striking workers. If they do, we will be penalized. Now, right now, when employers in the state, they pay, I think it's for the first $1,000, they're paying a tax. And it's right now it's 0.6%. And it's 0.6% because we are in compliance with federal guidelines.
Well, that's good.
If we get out of compliance, that 0.6% shoots up to 6%. So you're looking at $42 a worker versus $420 per worker.
Oh, my God.
So Lamont has vetoed this bill multiple times,
because they're trying it again. Because he has a brain. Go ahead.
Because he has a brain, and because he's a business guy, he gets it. Well, here was the what moment that I had last week.
Okay.
The chair of the Labor Committee, Julie Kushner from Danbury, Senator Julie Kushner, basically admitted, I'm picking a side with this bill, and I'm picking the side of the workers. She said working families, but that was kind of like, are you really picking working families? Less than 10% of the private sector workforce is in a union, and this bill only applies to people in a union. So the over 90% of working families don't qualify for this.
Wait a minute. The bill only applies to workers in a union?
Well, yeah, because workers in a union can go on strike. I mean, I guess you technically can go on strike if you're not in a union, but you don't have the same protections where your job's guaranteed. I mean, I can walk off my job at Yankee right now. Carol doesn't have to, you know, bring me back on when I'm done, you know, done with my demand. She's not going to say welcome back. She's going to say peace out, Megan. It's been fun.
She'll say, that's nice, Megan. When are you coming back?
It's been a heck of a ride, Megan, but you know, you can't just walk off the job. But when you're in a union, that's one of the benefits of being in a union. You have the protections to go on strike.
So
now the government,
but the point is, if there's like 10 people in a shop and they're not in a union and they all walk out, they don't get that protection?
No, they don't, because they're not. But that's fun. I mean, that's well known. But to call this bill a bill that helps working families, that's, you know, a stretch at best, because you're talking about less than 10% of our workforce. Mm-hmm. But the problem is the government is supposed to be a referee in this instance, you know, making sure workers are protected, you know, having the guidelines and regulations in place so workers aren't being exploited. They're not supposed to actually get involved in the fight. And it's almost hysterical. And I actually almost appreciate the honesty from Senator Kushner coming out and saying, I have picked a side. I've picked that side a long time ago, and it's with working families. And I'm proud of that. You're proud of the government intervening in a private labor dispute between management and employees. Like, you're in, you keep, mind your business, stay out of it. It has nothing to do with you.
And look, we're not here, neither you or I, defending every employer, because Lord knows you and I, my years ago, and I'm sure.
Oh, absolutely. This has nothing to do with the right to strike or reasons why they strike. Workers are, they are legally allowed to strike, and I don't have a problem with that.
Yeah.
I do have a problem with the government sticking their nose in. Now, this just does not going to affect the business that, you know, where the strike is at. Yeah. This could actually affect all businesses in the state, because unemployment taxes all go into like this big pot of money.
Oh, so they raise
when you tap into that money, and let's just say we have a deficit like we did in COVID, where we had to borrow money from the federal government, that gets spread around to all the other businesses. So you're not just affecting the big bad billionaire company. Beautiful. You're affecting all companies that pay into the system, and those are the small and medium companies also.
Everybody, you get a spike in rates, and you get a spike in rates.
Where's Oprah? Essentially, yes. And you're asking the employer who's having the strike on their at their location to fund their own strike, because when you have if you own a business and you're paying into the system, the rate you're paying is you get a ranking. And that's based on how many people are collecting at your establishment.
Yeah.
So if all my employees are collecting unemployment because they're out on strike, that's affecting my rating, which increases my cost of doing business. It's a snowball effect.
Yeah, a couple more things here. Megan Portfolio, of course, from the Yankee Institute. Tom Ritter, the House Speaker, Matt Ritter, I'm sorry, that was Dad. Matt Ritter said, I saw it the other day, and I think it was on CTN, so you must have seen it. he said something to the effect of, well, we're going to pass the homeschool bill in some form. I don't know whether that means just the registration, leave the curriculum part of it alone. And I've been warning listeners here, the curriculum thing to me is much more scary than the registration. What have you, any of your sources?
I'm dying to see what their proposal is. I have not seen it, but I do hope a lot of that, you know, that DCF part comes out. You know, you're basically putting the, you know, you're making all these poor parents have to defend themselves to DCS, and they've done nothing wrong. So I'd like to see that come out. I'd like to see the curriculum come out.
Yeah, but if that comes out, what are they going to pass? I mean,
I don't think anything that they pass is going to. With what happened with the voting, there's a lot of questions, and I actually just I just submitted it to my editor. It'll be out tomorrow. Okay. There were some changes in votes in the committee. It was really weird. I watched the meeting, and there were, and I saw the document where they record when they hand record the votes, and there were four votes that were whited out and went from, you know, supporting the bill. Oh no, yeah, not supporting the bill to voting the bill. Sorry, it's been a long day. And so four votes were changed. So it was funny when you were watching the committee meeting when they were voting it out. Most of the votes were taken, because with the whole remote thing, lawmakers can, you know, come back, check in later if they don't vote. But people were clapping, so it was like, yes, the bill died. It's not getting voted out of committee. All of a sudden, they kept votes open for an hour. Four votes were changed, and the bill ended up passing. So the homeschool committee is very concerned. Now, they're not accusing anyone of anything. They just have a lot of questions, like, why did this happen? I mean, I've seen it happen before where lawmakers have been strong-armed. Yeah. I'm not implying that this happened, but there are questions out there that need to be answered.
Yeah, be a pity if you didn't vote for the bill, because, God, I know how much you want that funding for that basketball court in your city or town. Be a pity if you didn't get that, right? Is that what strong-arming we're talking
about? Yeah, I mean, I hope that's not the case, because, I mean, I don't have a lot of faith in government. That would really crush it, because that's not the way the process is supposed to work. You know, you're elected by people in your community. You represent them, and you shouldn't be strong-armed into voting against your own constituents. But I'm not saying that happened, so please don't quote me on that.
No, I'm just saying
if that were to have happened, that's real bad.
Yeah, and, well, heck, I've had people on this show go on the record saying that happens. Finally, though, interesting, two of the no votes came from two black Democrats, Trine McGee in West Haven and Antonio Felipe in Bridgeport. And I was reading where I guess they both think that there's a little bit of a problem here in that community, because a lot of them are very religious and they homeschool for that reason. So I'm reading that as well.
Yeah, I mean, they completely forgot about a whole, like, percent of our population that homeschools. That's not just a predominantly white thing. Yeah. Black and brown, they homeschool as well. You know, they're just as concerned as, for the education of their kids as anyone else. And so they did the right thing. That's what their constituents wanted. And that's, you know, they did their job. Kudos to them.
Yes, and kudos to Megan Portfolio, who will now watch, between now and the next time we talk with her, she'll watch 37 hours of CTN, and she'll
I'm going to probably go make myself a drink, and then I'm going to start watching.
Okay. Megan, thanks. Have a happy weekend, and we'll talk next week, hopefully. Thank you.
All right. Bye, Paul.
Okay, thanks. Megan Portfolio there.